And good afternoon. Welcome to the Sunday Money Show. Financial opinions, recommendations expressed in the show, solely those of the commentator, and not necessarily those of IA Private Wealth, News Talk 1010, or Bell Media. IA Private Wealth is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. Allan Small Financial Group is a personal trade name of Allan Small, and it suggests you please consult your investment advisor for financial advice. And Ian Grant is also a personal trade name of me. So it looks like we're both on the same page. Allan, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing really well. The warm weather is finally here. Yeah, I'm really excited. I've been wearing a coat, I think, since last November. And finally, it's off.
We've got the pool open. I've been sitting outside for the last few nights, and I'm just enjoying every second of it. So good for us, right? Good for us.
Absolutely.
Let's get on with the show, because we have a ton of stuff to talk about. Now, you were telling me just before we started that the banks are really all over the place at the minute. They just don't seem to be focused on the same thing. They don't appear to act consistently. Can you talk more about what you meant?
Yeah, so banks, you know, the banks are in tough right now. There are a lot of different things going on with different banks. Some of our banks are more Canadian. Some of our banks are more international, like a Scotia Bank. Some of our banks have a lot of exposure to the U.S. markets, like a TD Bank or a Royal Bank or even a BMO. And depending on their business model, that is sort of dictating how these banks are trading. And so, for example, TD, right? A lot of exposure to the U.S. markets. They have more U.S. branches than they do here in Canada. They have exposure to investments in Charles Schwab. And Charles Schwab was called into question when we had the mini crisis, the bank mini crisis, as I call it, down in the U.S. in March. Charles Schwab was one of the stocks that had difficulty. TD Bank owns, I think, 13% ownership in Charles Schwab. They were going to buy First Horizon, which was a regional bank in the U.S. That deal fell through. TD Bank has been a bank, one of our largest banks, arguably our second largest, sometimes even our largest, and sometimes they pass Royal Bank in size, and going through some difficult times. Most shorted, and we've talked about this in the past, most shorted stocks, so people betting that TD Bank shares will fall in value. Most shorted bank in the world, actually, at one point. And then you compare that to a Royal Bank, a little more stability, bigger business here in Canada, but also a lot of business outside. All these bank stocks this past week have had really difficult earnings to parse through. Disappointing performance. Not unexpected. It was expected, but the stock still reacted negatively. They all sold off except for one bank, and that was CIBC, the smallest of our top five. CIBC actually beat expectations, the only bank out of the top five or the biggest five to do so. Their stock went up. And a funny story, actually, CIBC comes out with earnings. They beat expectations. The stock runs high. And then the next day, they get downgraded by an investment company saying that their shares are not going to do well. So there you go. The one bank that we had a little bit of sunshine for, a little ray of sunshine there, and then it was downgraded the next day. So our banks are in tough. It's not a surprise. The economy up here in Canada is slowing down. Economy down in the U.S. is slowing down. And we know banks are the bloodline of the economy. And so when there's a slowdown in the economy, banks will definitely feel it.
I joked with you a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't see how banks couldn't do well with the Bank of Canada just shoveling money at them with the rise in interest rates. And last week, surprise, surprise, Scotiabank economist suggesting that it would be prudent for the Bank of Canada to hike its interest rate in June after a pause that's been in place for most of this year. I get it. I'm jaded, Allan, but it's difficult for me to not imagine a bank saying, hey, hike the interest rates because that way we get more money.
Well, it used to be, and I say used to be, the point where interest rates rise, their net interest margin rises. What is net interest margin? Again, we've spoken about it on the show before. It is the spread between what banks make off the loans they provide, so the interest rates they charge, and the interest rates they pay out when you lend them money or when you put money in their savings accounts and they pay you a little bit of interest. What's been happening, however, to these banks is they've actually seen a shrinking net interest margin, because what's happening is banks are having to pay out more interest than they thought they would have to keep these deposits with the bank, they actually have to pay out more in interest on their savings accounts. So that is actually eating into their profitability. So their net interest margin, or the spread between what they're lending out or what they're charging on their loans and what they're paying for interest on their bank accounts, has actually gone, in some cases, a little bit more narrow. So you would think they'd be making even more and more money, but that's just not the case in many instances. And a bunch of the banks have said that net interest margin here in our country for the top six or five largest banks has actually shrunk and actually has not increased. So you're right, they do make money when interest rates rise, but when interest rates go up as fast as they have, these banks are actually in a worse position because now they're having to pay out more interest to maintain these bank deposits. So it's an interesting scenario, one that we don't see too often. It's not often you raise interest rates 8 times in Canada, 10 times in the US in a year. And that has really caught the banks by surprise. And look what we saw in the US, right? We saw 3 bank failures. And that, to me, is because how quickly interest rates have gone up in the United States. And you know, here in our country, because our banks are a lot larger and there are a lot fewer of them, we've been able to handle the situation better. But in the US, some of their smaller banks have now disappeared.
Get to the US in a sec, but I guess the question really I should have put to you was, what do you think of this suggestion from Scotiabank that the rates get raised again next month?
Well, I don't like it. I haven't liked these bank, these interest rate increases now for quite some time. I believe inflation's coming down, but not because the Fed or the Bank of Canada is doing, you know, a fantastic job getting these interest rates down. Yes, getting inflation down. Yes, interest rates are rising. It does help dampen, I guess, the demand or slow down demand for product. And that in turn brings down the inflation. But I think we're there. I think, you know, inflation in our country now, 4.3%, in the US, 4.9%. Do we really have to keep raising rates? And look what it's causing in the banking sector. It is causing chaos for these major banks and investment institutions. And it's definitely causing these banks not to lend as much money. They need more money on reserve to pay off some of these debts that people might default on. They need more money there when people come calling for their savings accounts. So banks are not lending as much, both here and in the US, and that's slowing further the economy. So I don't think that is correct. I don't think the Bank of Canada needs to start up this interest rate hiking cycle again, just because the reading on the last report of inflation ticked up to 4.4 from 4.3. I think it's still coming down, and I'm hopeful we'll see a number in the threes in the not-so-distant future on inflation.
You were talking about the U.S. Fed a second ago, and they really do appear to be in a rough area, facing some difficult choices. Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, that's an inflation indicator, on Friday actually seemed to suggest inflation rose slightly higher in April, which could suggest to the Fed that their job is still not done. And as you were just saying, you know, 10 rapid rate hikes over the past year, they've shown some cracks in the system already, like, you know, in the banking system, as you were just saying, you know, the whole beatings will continue until morale improves logic doesn't seem to be working.
No, it doesn't. And that's what I've said for a long time. I don't think what the Fed has done has made sense. It's the only instrument they have to bring down inflation. I understand that. And they're going to use that instrument to the best of their ability. But I think inflation has come down for other reasons that were more important, namely lower energy costs. I think that has had a major impact on bringing down inflation. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. We got the PCE, as the acronym goes, on Friday, showing a bit higher or hotter inflation than anticipated. And then what do we see? Well, we saw the percentage of the Fed increasing rates in June. It came in prior to that number at around 25-30% of a chance that they could increase. By the time the end of the day came on Friday, it was over 60% that they would increase interest rates by a quarter point in June. So you can see where the market is leaning. It is leaning for another 25 basis point hike. Again, I don't agree with it, but the Fed is probably, I wouldn't be surprised if they go 25 basis points. And then we're going to be left with the same question. Is this the last one? Are they going to raise in July? It just doesn't stop. It just goes on and on and on. At some point, the Fed's got to pause and take stock and take note of where we're at and where the United States is. You couple that with the debt ceiling debate that has been going on for a while, and you have a difficult situation, difficult environment, yet the stock market keeps going higher. So there you go. What do these guys know, right? They think everything's going to come tumbling down.
I watched you quoted in another interview where you said that bond yields, well, you've never seen them quite like this. Can you, you got about a minute. Can you just go into that in a bit more detail?
Yeah. So bond yields are unbelievable, especially in the U.S. You were seeing bond yields. Okay. This is for a 1 month government bond rate. I saw it a few days ago at 6%. 6% for a 1 month government bond. You look at a 20 year, a 30 year, you know, the 10 year, let's just take an easy one. The 10 year is under 4.
Wow.
So you get 6% for 1 month on an annual, as an annual rate, of course. And on a 10 year, you get less than 4. How does that make sense? And all this is happening because of the uncertainty that has been going on and on and on, over the debt ceiling debate. You know, everything else to do with higher interest rates, higher for longer. When is the Fed going to stop? And it's really left the bond market upside down.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, it's kind of like CMHC worried about housing and really doing nothing to help it. Bank of Canada worried about Canadian debt and a whole lot more. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. If you would like to reach Alan, you can. His website, 2Ls, alansmall.com, alansmall.com. Or you can always give his office a call, 416-332-3863. That's 416-332-3863. I'm Ian Grant. This is the Sunday Money Show right here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. And we are back. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, and I am joined today by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. You want to find out more about Alan? Check out his website, 2lsalansmall.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, Alan Small GTA, or give his office a call at 416-332-3863. Alan, as always, you are on the radio on this Sunday afternoon, and that means that this upcoming Wednesday, the digital show takes to the airwaves on alansmall.com.
Absolutely. And as always, I plan on having a great informative show talking again about what's going on out there, the environment for investing, what's going on, what's working, what's not working. We're going to speak about many different things with respect to what you should be looking for as an individual investor before you make your investment decisions. This is the This Week component of our show, where we set aside or name 3 points that individual investors should consider before they make their investment decisions over the next few weeks. And I think, and I hope that many are getting a lot out of this segment, because I think it's definitely something that people should look to before they make their investment decisions, whether they're buying a stock, a bond, or a mutual fund. I think this gives people some insight into what to look for or what to consider when you make your decision. So again, we're going to have a great show. And again, most of the information that we're going to put out there comes from all the listeners, from all the individual investors, from my clients, and not just my clients, but individual investors that I've spoken to over the last few weeks. And that's usually quite a bit of quite a number of people.
You want to catch past shows? Say you want to watch the upcoming show. Check out alansmall.com, alansmall.com. And the last show, I was just watching it actually just before this show. You had Canadian Federation of Independent Business President CEO Dan Kelly on your show. I'm curious, what did he have to say about the state of small business these days? And basically, I guess the real question is, how are they coping with inflation and higher interest rates?
Yeah, Dan's great. I've had him on the show. This is the second time. And we've had him on the show with us, I think, as well, too, a little while back. And he really has his finger on the pulse. You know, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, over 95,000 members, 95,000 small businesses. So he really knows his stuff and what's going on there. And he's in contact with all these individual businesses regularly. And he said that businesses are suffering. Many of them still have not recovered from the days of the pandemic. And those that have, they're suffering today under the weight of higher debt, or at least the cost of carrying their debt. Many of these businesses have borrowed money to either grow or to start up. And obviously now we know interest rates are a lot higher. So between that, between still trying to get enough people to come in and fill the job openings, I couldn't believe it. But Dan Kelly was telling me that labor is still an issue for many businesses. And I thought that was sort of subsiding, but he said, no, there's still a lot of job openings out there and not enough people to fill them. So it's interesting. And lastly, he mentioned SBA, the federal government, the giving out those loans for businesses that they would be able to, or wouldn't have to pay back for a few years. Well, guess what? A few years is up. And now the government's asking for businesses to pay back their loans. And many businesses are struggling to do that. So a lot going on with small business. It obviously depends on what sector of the economy you're in. Certain sectors are doing better than others. I find the travel, hospitality industry is faring well, and other sectors not so well. So it really just depends on where you are. But overall, he's still bothered by what's happening with small business in this country, and he's hopeful things will get better. But he's just it's very difficult to find that path towards success, and he's saying it's more narrow and narrow each day.
What are you experiencing? Because obviously you talk to an awful lot of people as well at street level. What are you getting back from small business?
And great question. And I mentioned this to Dan because I wanted to see if he had the same perspective. Like, he told me things are somewhat negative. I said that my comments, or at least what I'm hearing from small business and business owners, my clients, some of them, they're telling me things are just stagnant. Like, it's not that they're falling, but it's not that they're rising. So business is just stagnant. They're having difficulties getting ahead, increasing sales, increasing business in general. And obviously we know costs are rising, whether it's labor costs, whether it's cost of materials or whatever it is. Costs are rising, but business is not rising with it. And that's what I've seen. And so a lot of business owners are just treading water, you know, going in every day, trying to grow, and they're finding it difficult. And it's a shame, because instead of costs dropping, instead of cost of debt falling, those things are rising, and it's making it very difficult for these business owners.
Alan, in a document flagging potential sources of concern for a stable financial system in Canada, Bank of Canada is worrying about Canadians' ability to manage their debt in a higher interest rate environment, as well as the impact that potentially deteriorated conditions in the global financial markets could have on funding costs. What is your take on the Bank of Canada being worried about a situation that they are at the helm of?
I think they should be worried. You know, we've said for a long time that Canada, I believe, has the highest debt levels of any G7 country. At one point, I don't know what the number is now, I haven't seen it in a little while, but at one point, I think the average person was borrowing $1.60 for every dollar they made. And I think it actually maybe even got higher than that. So there is a lot of debt out there. And then when you couple that with rising interest rates, knowingly raising the interest rates on people, interest rate on your line of credit, interest rate on your mortgage, two things that many people have, whether it's a line of credit and or mortgage, it makes things a lot difficult. And it's no wonder the Bank of Canada stopped raising rates well before the Fed. I think down in the U.S., they have the same problem, but I guess not as bad as us here when you look at the overall totals. So yeah, I think just like the Fed is in a bit of a pickle trying to raise interest rates when the effects we're seeing on banks, I think the Bank of Canada could be in the same boat trying to, or maybe wanting to raise interest rates, but they know if they do, what's going to happen to the average person walking the streets of Toronto or Calgary or Montreal or wherever else? Will they be able to cope? Will they be able to pay their debt, pay their mortgage? Or will they just go to the bank, hand in their keys to their house and go find a rental place? This is the dilemma. And I think the Bank of Canada is right to be concerned, especially with the debt levels, as we're hearing out there, it's a problem.
It's not just a problem, though, for homeowners, obviously, but I mean, what are investors saying about the financial strain?
You know, I think investors are saying that it's very difficult to invest knowing that businesses are in tough. If businesses cannot borrow to grow, if businesses are having stagnant sales because people aren't spending as much money because they're having to pay more money for, you know, their car rental or their lease on their car or whatever it is. You know, I just heard from somebody recently, some shocking numbers on lease payments. You know, going to lease a car, they couldn't believe the interest rates on that lease, how much they've gone up. It's just all around. And as Elon Musk said in a recent interview that I saw, you know, when you raise interest rates, the non-direct effects on everybody are ginormous. You know, you may not have a mortgage. You could be somebody that you have a business, your house is paid for, you're in great shape, but you're still affected because in your business, you rely on customers and those customers have debt. And if they're paying more for their debt, they're not spending as much in your store or in your facility or on your on whatever that you produce. And so you are affected. So we're all affected by higher borrowing costs, higher debt levels. And so as investors, you have to be mindful of that and understand that, yeah, maybe your bank stocks don't go up as much because they're in tough. Maybe your Canadian National Railway stock doesn't go up as much because they're not shipping as many things to and from locations. So this is, as an investor, this is how it affects all of us. It affects all of us because we all are dependent on interest rates. And obviously the lower, the better, the higher, the more difficult it is for many people.
Tell you what, take a break and we will come back with more. You're listening to Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. If you'd like to find out more, check out his Twitter feed. That's always a great way to see what's top of mind with Alan. Alan Small GTA, Alan Small GTA, or of course his website, 2Ls, alansmall.com, alansmall.com. Or you can pick up the phone and give him a call, 416-332-3863. That's 416-332-3863. The Sunday Money Show continues. I'm Ian Grant. Thanks for joining us this afternoon right here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. We are back and this is the Sunday Money Show on this Sunday afternoon here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant, joined this afternoon by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. 2Ls, alansmall.com. Alansmall.com is the website if you'd like to find out more. One of the things you will find out is about the Alan Small difference, and that's something that we've been talking about, Alan, since we started doing this show years ago, and it was something that came out of, you know, the different approach you take with listeners as opposed to the old, you know, shirt and tie sitting behind a desk, very formal approach.
Yeah, it's basically trying to help as many people as I can. And you would think, well, why is that the Alan Small difference? That should be everybody. Well, I think it is to a certain degree, but there are many financial advisors, investment advisors out there that when they meet you, they'll tell you what they can do and how they do it. And if you as an investor meet that criteria or fit into their mold or their cookie cutter approach, then hey, you can be a client. We work at the Alan Small Financial Group. We work differently. We try to fit our clients, what our clients want. So I try to fit in. If I can help the individual investor, then I will do so, depending on what they want, whether they want growth, whether they want income, whether they want a little bit of both, growth and income. I build portfolios from scratch to meet the needs of that investor. And over time, we continue to monitor those portfolios, continue to look for possible changes. Over the last few weeks, actually, I've been contacting many individual investors about some changes to their portfolio. And recently, this past week, a lot of us saw shares of NVIDIA, a chip maker responsible for powering most of the artificial intelligence that we've been hearing about over the last bunch of months. And NVIDIA stock in one day went up 25%. Wow. Well, you get on the phone and talk to your clients, and some people took a little bit of profit off the table over the last few days, the end of this past week. So it's interesting because the more you're in touch with clients, the more you can help them, the more you understand what they're looking for. And you know, there's definitely a trust factor there. They trust that you're looking out for their best interest. And that's really, at the end of the day, what the Alan Small difference is. It's all about trying to help individuals and helping them, not trying to see if they fit in my business, but where my business can fit in with the individual investor.
Want to find out more? His website, 2Ls, alansmall.com, alansmall.com. Give him a call, 416-332-3863. We touched on this during the first segment, Alan, but last week we saw an awful lot of the Canadian big banks recording their quarterly earnings. Profits do seem to be down, some though raising their dividends. Can you talk about what you've seen from the Canadian Q2 quarterly earnings?
Well, as I said earlier, I think overall the banks in general, they had disappointing earnings, not unexpected. A lot of the bank stocks sold off this past week, which I guess if you have some cash on the sidelines, you're looking for a good long-term growth and income investment, I think these banks work. You know, a lot of people are negative on the banks. There was, I saw this person, I forget where, talking a bit about how banks rarely have, you know, 2 years in a row where they don't do well or make money for our investors. And now we possibly could be going on year three. So we're in a, I guess, rare territory here with the banks. They've been struggling for a little while now, but once again, they seem to always raise their dividend. A number of them raise dividends. I think all of them, except for TD Bank, raised their dividend. TD Bank instead chose to buy back their own shares, which sort of has the same effect. It causes the stock to rise when you buy back your own shares. And these banks are flush with cash, as we've said. They make a lot of money. And just unfortunately right now, they're just not making as much money perhaps as they'd like and perhaps as they made a year or two ago. So, you know, it is what it is. I think if you own a bank today, you should continue to hold it, maybe add to it at these low prices, because I think you will be rewarded in the future.
That was where I was going, actually, was the question, are Canadian banks still a good investment? And obviously, you feel yes.
Absolutely. I think they're great for that right investor. For those that can handle the risk tolerance that these banks have, you know, they are somewhat volatile, especially recently with some of the bank failures in the U.S. But overall, I think banks, Canadian banks still are the rock of many of the portfolios, the base of many of my portfolios that I build for individual investors that are looking for growth, medium risk, that kind of thing. And I think for most investors, investing in bank stocks here in Canada allows you to sleep at night knowing these are the biggest companies in the country and they're not going anywhere. They may go up and down, but the good thing is they continue to pay dividends. They increase those dividends over time. And if you look at a long-term chart, it always seems to go from the bottom left to the top right.
Alan, there are some people out there who are noting that it only seems like there are maybe five or seven stocks that are actually moving the markets. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
No, it's not actually. The market breadth, as we call it, you know, a lot of people have been on TV talking about market breadth and the fact that if you take away the biggest 10 stocks, and most of them are tech stocks, but the biggest 10 stocks on the S&P 500, you actually would have a slightly negative return for the year. Whereas the S&P 500 right now is up about, depending when you, I think I looked last, it was about 7-8%, might be a little higher now. I haven't looked in the last few trading days. But overall, you take away those top or those largest stocks and to have a flat or slightly negative return, you can clearly see that names like Microsoft and Alphabet and Apple and you know, Google or Alphabet, as I said, Amazon's another one. Meta is huge. Nvidia, as I mentioned earlier, you take away these stocks, it's negative. You own these stocks and you're doing okay. And a lot of people have said this is not good, this is dangerous. And I guess it is. But I like to ask all these people that think that this is not a good thing. And I agree, it's not. You want to see growth spread out amongst the whole economy and all sectors. But how often do you actually see that, right? You know, you usually will see bank stocks do well, and then maybe that day tech stocks do well, but then utilities don't, or oil goes down, or retail is having a struggle. And then the next day you see manufacturing do well, and then, you know, gold goes down. It's, you're never going to have it all working or all clicking as we would all love to have. So instead of complaining that this is what's going on and complaining that it's not healthy, own one of these names. I've been saying for quite some time, everybody needs, if you're looking for growth, everybody needs to own a few of these big cap, especially tech names, but big cap names in general. Own a couple of the biggest companies in the world. They happen to be technology. Own them. Don't trade them. Own them for the long term, whether it's Apple or Microsoft or Amazon. Own them. I think over the long term, you will be rewarded. So instead of worrying about the breadth of the market, which we all seem to be worried about, and I too watching it as well, own these names, own a piece of them, because over time, they're going to allow your portfolio or help your portfolio grow.
Seems like there is a couple of winners in the AI race right now. And the subject of artificial intelligence is just all over the place. I'm just curious, who do you see as the early winners? Some say it's Microsoft and NVIDIA. What do you think?
Great question. You know, I'm going to answer that. I'm going to say the winners are anybody who mentions the word artificial intelligence in their press conference or their conference call. It's unbelievable. This past week, if you were a company that like Marvell, for example, a chip maker, right? Not a name that many people know. They talked about how their business is growing based on artificial intelligence. Stock was up over 20% on Friday. Unbelievable. A lot of people don't even know who Marvell is. I happen to own a little bit of it for some clients, but even I don't own a large position. But obviously names like NVIDIA, that is the big one. They power most of the artificial intelligence that that you know businesses need. AMD has been rewarded. And then you have the companies themselves, you know, the ChatGPTs, the Microsoft, right? Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Meta. Anybody who's using artificial intelligence, which as we've started to learn, are many different companies, even companies like IBM, IBM, unfortunately, stock hasn't performed too well, but they've been talking artificial intelligence for a long time. There are a lot of companies out there. Tesla, another one that comes to mind. Elon Musk is talking about artificial intelligence, right? Autonomous driving, that's artificial intelligence. These are companies that have been using AI, but now it seems to have become the go-to, right? It's the go-to for everything. Search, you want to search up and write an essay. A student wants to write an essay, ChatGPT, write an essay on whatever it is, boom, an essay is there for you. If you want to do any kind of research, it gets done for you. So any company that's talking about AI right now is going to see their stock performance. It is the hot topic.
This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. If you would like to reach Alan, you can 416-332-3863. His website, 2Ls, alansmall.com. Sunday Money Show continues on News Talk 1010 Toronto. And we're back. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm Ian Grant. Thank you for joining us. I'm joined by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. And Alan, we mentioned earlier that your digital show will be premiering this Wednesday on alansmall.com. Alan, on your last show, you talked about an investment strategy of overweighting a position in an area of the market or on an actual investment itself.
Yeah. So what that means basically is, a lot of us, we always talk about diversification, right? You want to be diversified right across many different sectors of the market. You want to own obviously good quality names in those sectors, but you want to be nicely diversified. Well, sometimes if you feel as though there's a good quality name out there that is undervalued, perhaps you want to overweight that position in your portfolio. You may want to overweight one position. So let's say one stock or one mutual fund or one investment idea. Or you may want to put more money in that sector. So overweight the sector in general. I know lots of people, we've been talking bank stocks earlier, that overweight the bank stocks. They put a little bit more money in banks than they do other sectors. I know for me, as an example, I've been overweighting some of the names in the tech space. And we've been talking about this since the beginning of the year. You know, names like Amazon and Google, which lost half their value. Stocks were trading at half their highs earlier in the year in $90 range, let's say. Now these stocks are over $120 a share. So overweighting a position allows you to perhaps gain a bit of a jump on the overall index. When we diversify, we're kind of playing a little safer. We're being a little cautious. If one area goes down, another part of the market goes up and offsets it if you're invested in both those sectors. But when you overweight a position, you're kind of taking on a bigger bet in that area. And I hate to use the word bet because I don't want people to think it's a gamble. It is actually investing in a part of the market that you feel strongly about, that if that does well, then the returns can be higher or more so than if you were just to, diversify equal weight right across the board. So I think over the first 5 months of this year, there have been a lot of opportunities to take a larger position in individual names, a larger position in the tech sector as a whole. And I've been doing so for many of my clients. Again, for those that can handle the risk level that doing something like this or a strategy like this provides, if you can handle the risk, yeah, it's been definitely a profitable start to the year for those that have overweight the tech space.
Almost impossible to do this show this week, especially without talking about gas prices. Last week, gas prices at the pumps surging to levels that we haven't seen since November 2022. Do you want to talk a little bit about what caused the surge in prices?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I guess the simple answer is, I really don't know. Because when you look at the price of oil, WTI, you know, you're looking at $72 a barrel. It hasn't really gone up much. Some people are saying it's the weakness in the Canadian dollar that's caused the price to move higher. Some people are saying it's a supply-demand factor that's causing the price to move higher. There have been rumblings that the United States has been buying back oil to put it into its reserves. Keep in mind, the U.S. has been taking money out of their reserves for a while now, for many months, and pumping it into the global system. So there are a lot of, perhaps, reasons why the price of filling up your car is higher than it was. And I've heard that it's going to go even higher. So not sure. What I do know is, however, it's like another tax for most of us, right? Most of us still fill up our cars. And when you do, and you're paying more at the pumps, you're paying more to that trucking company, paying more to that airline because of higher fuel costs, then it's a tax on us. It's an added cost. And you couple that again with higher interest rates, higher inflation, and the whole gamut that we talk about all the time. And it's just another knock against individuals, individual investors, but individuals in general, walking the street and driving their cars and taking those road trips. So we'll see if that actually affects things for the remainder of, I guess, of this month, which is almost over, but into June. We'll see if many people take those road trips if the price to fill up your tank is significantly higher.
As always, you can text us. Text board is always open at 71010. 71010, regular texting rate supply. Hey, Alan, just wondering, the U.S. Federal Reserve set their inflation target at 2%. Do you think that's realistic?
Again, another great text question. I think it's not, to be honest. I know that when we do our calculations for individuals, right, they come to us, they say, this amount of money I have right now, if I invested for 10 years at this inflation rate, at this rate of return, at this taxation rate, et cetera, you know, how much could I pull out of my portfolio every year until I'm no longer here? And when we do those calculations, and they happen often, we usually use an inflation rate of about 3%. Yet the Bank of Canada and Federal Reserve, for some reason, want to make it 2%. Well, what happens if interest rates fall, inflation falls to 3% and it stays there? Is the Fed or Bank of Canada going to want to raise interest rates to get it down to 2? I think 3 is good enough. Again, maybe I'm foolish, I don't know. But to me, a 3% inflation rate is what all the calculations I do is based on. And I think a 3% inflation rate makes a lot more sense. I think you're going to have a heck of a time bringing down inflation to 2% from where it's now just over 4. That last percent or 2, I think, could be very challenging. I know getting it down from 8 to 4 was challenging, but we did it. That last couple of percent, I think, will prove to be very challenging. So I do think that the Bank of Canada and Fed are asking for a lot there. I'd be happy, you know, in that 3% range, and I'm sure many others would as well.
You're listening to the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto. I'm joined by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. Here's another one for you. Alan, is the commercial real estate industry the next shoe to drop?
Again, it's a great question because many are nervous, right? For a lot of the space that we see in downtown Toronto, for example, businesses never came back fully. People never fully came back to work. There are a lot of open spaces in downtown Toronto, just like in many metropolitan areas. And you couple that again with higher interest rates, and you could have a situation where commercial real estate is in tough. And hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully businesses can get some individuals, can get some people to fill these spaces, new businesses coming in to take the place of some of the ones that exited. But it's been a worry for quite some time. We've been talking about higher interest rates, not good for real estate. And hopefully we can skirt through this and it won't be an issue. But many people definitely have it on their radar screen.
I got about a minute and a half left, and there was an interesting question brought up earlier. We were talking about the Allen Small difference. And, you know, do you find that clients have different expectations about the amount of contact they prefer to have? Because honestly, I'm probably one of those people where I would push it all on your desk, walk out and let you deal with it as you see fit. And I can imagine other people who would want to be truly involved in the process.
Exactly. There are, I would say, more people that do what I guess you do, you know, push it on my desk and say, you're the professional, you let me know what we need to do. And you know, we go that route. Mm-hmm. There are a few that like to be involved in the process, and that's great as well. It's great talking to people about their investments. A lot of these people are knowledgeable, and they just like to have a hand in what goes on. They like to understand things a little bit more than those that just kind of rely on me and then and walk out the door. So either way, you know, it's good. I just think that different people have different expectations, how often you meet with them, how often you speak to them. I try to be in touch with my clients on a regular basis, every 6 to 8 weeks, or even sooner if something pops up. Like I mentioned earlier, this whole NVIDIA thing, when the stock went through the roof this past week, got in touch with a lot of individual investors. I still probably have a bunch to get in touch with. So overall, I just think it's very person or people specific, depending on who you are and what your expectation is. I try to meet it. And that's what the Allen Small difference is, trying to meet the expectations of my clients, be there for them when they need me, rather than me telling them the way I do things and, you know, trying to fit them into my model. So yeah, I think it's different for everybody. And I just try to meet everyone's expectation and try to be there when they need me most.
As always, a great hour, Allen. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to reach Allen, you can, 416-332-3863. His website, 2Ls, allensmall.com, allensmall.com. I'm Ian Grant, and this has been the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010 Toronto.